Today we are joined by Justin and Jehan, both co-founders of Althea. Althea makes software and hardware which enables full-stack decentralized internet service providers, where routers pay each other for bandwidth at negotiated rates. We cover the basics of Althea, dive into their analysis of the economics of TCP/IP routing, and discuss their work on the Peggy Ethereum bridge.
And we're on for the sixth episode of Interchain FM. I'm your host, Chango Unchained.
I'm your co-host, Christopher. And here today we have Justin and John from Althea. Can you introduce yourselves and introduce Althea?
Hi, I'm Justin, CTO and co-founder of Althea.
I'm Jehan, co-founder of Althea.
And Althea makes software that allows routers to pay each other for bandwidth. And that's sort of the short explanation. And I'll leave the long explanation up to individual questions because it takes a little while to break down and I don't want to get too deep into it.
And that's kind of a technical explanation, but from a user level, it basically is a technology that allows people to set up networks in their communities, which are sort of like wireless ISPs. Everyone in the network is actually an independent node, and they can earn money by forwarding bandwidth to their neighbors. So this is a way for towns and cities to get an alternative form of internet access, where it's kind of put together by the community itself versus from an ISP coming in from outside.
Is this something like a mesh network?
So that depends on how you want to use the word mesh. And since it's been used as a marketing term, it essentially has no like effective meaning anymore. Generally, people assume mesh to mean like a network that is densely connected, where like each node is connected to every other node. And that is not how Althea works. But in the sense that any node can connect to any other node and it seamlessly works and auto-configures, yes, Althea is a mesh network. And we do a lot of things that people associate with mesh networking, like automated failover, automated setup, you know, plug-and-play connectivity with people who are nearby that you can communicate to. But it's not quite the sort of seamless walk-around, connect-to-anyone thing that people tend to imagine, both due to the rules of physics and cost and service.
It's built for long distances, so it's building to building, so you can get your internet access from a few miles away from someone else.
And so you do have to install and set up an antenna, which is about as much effort as, you know, let's suppose you wanted to screw on a new light fixture on the outside of your house. You need about the same amount of tool and about the same amount of skill. Other than the software configuration, which Althea is sort of trying to simplify and make easy and make plug and play. So we consider that to be our job.
So what has changed economically in the past few decades that makes Althea work now? Why wasn't the internet originally built this way?
This is a great question. Thank you so much for asking this. What has changed is that when the internet was first built, nobody really knew how to pay for it or how to bill for it. So the only number that people had to go on was the speed of the line that they had installed. You know, how many bits per second could you put over this line? People didn't know what user traffic typically looked like or what it would look like. They didn't really know how to manage it. And even if you could, you know, manipulate, manage, and bill traffic, and you knew how you wanted to do that, the processors simply weren't fast enough. You needed dedicated hardware. I mean, why bother doing something like, you know, software routing or billing by the, or like really dynamic billing or really dynamic traffic control when to do so, you'd slow down your traffic speed by 100x because the processors were just that slow, or a lot more than 100x, maybe 10,000x in the very early days. So when the internet was designed, it really wasn't designed with the understanding that you could build arbitrary software to manipulate packets in real time. And I mean, no, that's not quite the right way to phrase that. The way to phrase that is that the billing system for the internet was sort of designed missing a lot of these things. You know, nobody really knew what user traffic looked like. They only had the speed of the line to sell. So when they went to sell internet connection to users, they sold them a share of that internet line. And that just made sense at the time because it was the only number they really had. And nobody really knew what was going on. Now, things have changed a lot. It is completely possible with regular consumer hardware to do stuff that involves monitoring traffic, routing it dynamically, writing really advanced software to manage where you send it. And this gets more into like the mesh networking vision. And this is where we sort of tie into that.
So another big thing that's changed is that wireless internet equipment has gotten much, much better. Of course, you know, when the internet was first created, it didn't exist at all. And it's gotten a lot faster even in the past few years, to where you can have an antenna on your house that costs a few $100 or even less maybe, which can do a gigabit of speed, which is, you know, equivalent to a fiber connection. And the reason that's important for our model is that Althea's kind of model where it's made up of all these different people in the community mounting the equipment on their properties, it doesn't work with cables that go under the ground, because there the main cost is digging up the street and putting in the cable. And that kind of thing is actually it's easier for a municipality or a large corporation to do, because it's just a very big project. But with the modern wireless internet gear, you can get equivalent speeds with something that everyone can put on their house. And so Althea is sort of paired, the Althea economic model is paired to that type of hardware, which, you know, it allows people to put this equipment on their house to supply internet to their community and then also earn money with it. So that's another big thing that's changed.
So the technology has changed significantly. It's a lot faster, it's a lot more flexible, it's a lot more capable. But the model, the way internet is sold, hasn't changed pretty much at all. I mean, if you take a look at the basic software that is in your home right now, you know, all of it is well over a decade old, some of it too, and it hasn't really been touched in that time. So you see in countries where who can bury lines underground is very well managed, you see that internet is cheap. In countries where it's not well managed, you know, like most of America, or where the size is larger and it's just harder to do in general, you'll see that internet is expensive and slow and bureaucratic. And the last part is really the big problem. The vast majority of the cost of setting up internet service to someone is the bureaucracy of digging up all of their lawns, installing the cables, hooking up all of the users, and then finally talking to each of them and convincing them to switch. So the technology has gotten drastically cheaper and more capable, but the way we sell internet is mainly constrained by just bureaucratic restrictions. So this is the key principle of Althea, is that we leverage all these changes in technology to say, well, what if we wanted to look at how we would sell internet differently today? And the answer is, you would probably want to avoid burying things underground. You would probably want to use more private property. And you would probably want to sort of manipulate traffic more and, let's say, pay each individual for traffic that passes over their property, because now you can do those things. Software is fast enough that you can encrypt traffic, so you don't have to worry, well, it's going over somebody's private property, they could snoop on the traffic. No, fast enough, we can encrypt it now. Or like, oh man, you know, if we really needed to track who sent what traffic where, we'd slow things down a lot and we can't afford that. Nope, fast enough now. Even cheapest consumer gear is fast enough. So the entire sort of formula has changed, and Althea comes at the problem of selling internet from a completely different direction, reimagined for sort of what modern hardware can do in order to do more with less. You know, so wireless gear has advanced and this hardware has advanced, but the cost is, you know, the cost of the hardware is a fairly trivial part of the actual home internet service in a traditional state. So for a fiber or a cable install, you're looking at $5,000 or $2,000 a home, and most of that is burying stuff. For Althea, right now we install users for, you know, $200-ish, including labor. So that's parts, labor, everything. Whole job. And that's a lot cheaper. And that's because we leverage private property, so we don't need to dig up a bunch of lawns. We use these new advanced antennas, and we can use cheap consumer router gear that we reprogram with our new software, because now just about any hardware is fast enough to do all of these things.
I have one quick follow-up question, and then a question subsequently to that. So the quick, hopefully limited time frame relevant question is, how does Althea bridge to the traditional internet infrastructure? And how do you handle the economics of that bridge? Are the costs different if I'm sending to another Althea user versus sending across the laid cable line?
The way Althea bridges to the traditional internet is, so in Althea network, you know, these antennas on people's houses all connecting together, forming this network. Any node that is in that network that has a connection to the traditional internet can basically sell that bandwidth into the Althea network. And in practice, that actually tends to be, in the networks that we have on the ground, that's usually one or two nodes who have kind of a high-grade business internet connection. And so they sell that bandwidth into the Althea network, and that allows all the nodes on the network to basically use their connection. And then there's also something called an exit node, which is a little bit more technical. It's in a data center, and it kind of acts as a VPN server, and that makes it so that none of the nodes in Althea network can see each other's traffic as they're forwarding it, because it's all encrypted, the exit nodes. Those are the two ways that it connects to the traditional internet.
I like what Justin said about you guys disintermediating, basically, or I guess overstepping traditional regulation, right? So we've seen that, at least in the US, the phone companies that have laid the phone lines were able to take advantage of the existing regulations and basically capture the like fiber optic and internet models of the future. But what I'm understanding from what Althea is doing is that people ultimately still will rely on ISPs to source their internet bandwidth. Is that right?
There's sort of two answers to that question. And that sort of gets into what is the internet? And I'll admit that this is something we spend more time trying to explain than is entirely reasonable. So when you say that there's still an ISP, in the sense that there's still an organization of people that work together to provide internet, and they need to work together for that to function, yes, because the internet itself is a series of organizations and networks that work together to provide service to each other. So what you could describe Althea as doing is pulling the model you see at the core of the internet, where many different companies interconnect and work together and pay each other for traffic, towards the edge of the internet, towards the like user. For example, a large fiber network like Level 3 will work with Google to take traffic from Level 3's users to Google's servers, and Google will work with Level 3 to make sure that they interconnect at the right spots so that they can get traffic to the right places. And, you know, Level 3 in turn interconnects with end user ISPs, you know, so they could be smaller ISPs in small towns, or it could be, for example, Comcast to get stuff to all of Comcast users. And the internet is a mix of people. So to say that, yes, you're still going to be using someone's fiber lines, yes, that's true. But as an Althea user, you're not using one person's fiber lines. Your router is selecting the best source. So the router's actively route traffic. They map the network. They look at what the best route is at any given time, the best price, the best quality. And they may switch fiber lines, fiber providers, mm-hmm. connections, second by second, looking for the best deal and the best service. And this is actually what it's like if you are Google, or if you're Level 3, or if you're Comcast. They have many different lines and many different routes in which to serve the same traffic. And they choose those using their own software. And we're sort of bringing that to the user in an automated and decentralized way.
So a quick way to explain it, I think, is that the nodes supplying bandwidth to an Althea network, they're essentially supplying wholesale bandwidth. And so they're kind of connecting directly to the, you know, to the core of the internet. And those kind of connections, those are used by ISPs, regular conventional retail ISPs as well. But Althea is on the retail level. And it makes it so. It's kind of like, if you think of like a food co-op versus a grocery store, buying it wholesale and then distributing to the community for a better price than you generally get from a retail ISP.
The analogy that I'm drawing in my head is that of an electrical grid. Please correct me if I'm wrong. It's that previously people would connect to a centralized electrical grid, whereas Althea enables them to connect with each other.
Yeah, and, exactly. Someone's still connected to the power plant.
Someone's still connected to the power plant. So previously, they had one set of lines that connected to one power plant, and maybe that power plant connected to... See, this is the problem with trying to explain this, and this is the way Jahan's explanation is different from mine, and that is that it's varying degrees of trying to explain the internet while answering your question.
So suppose that Althea succeeds over, say, a contiguous landmass, because I guess your antennas can't reach cross-Atlantic for now. How, one, does the routing scale to that level? And two, how do the payments work? If I send a packet all the way from Western Oregon to New York City on Manhattan, who pays? Do I pay for all of the hops? Do each of the hops pay each other? How is that routing handled? How do the economics work out?
So this is a very interesting question. So basically, Althea, if it was across a large landmass, it would still actually be in a large number of basically subnetworks, these local networks. So you wouldn't be connecting in one Althea network all the way from California to New York or anything. The other thing is that of course, for long distances, going over fiber is definitely going to be more efficient. So you always want to have the least number of hops. So you wouldn't be going over hundreds of individual wireless connections across the country. It would probably go over a few hops and then onto the backbone, like I said. But in terms of how the payment and routing works, so within one of these smaller local networks, the way the payment works is that the routing protocol actually figures out not only like which one of your neighbors is the best suited to forward a packet to your destination, but it also, all the routers are always basically advertising their prices to each other. So if I'm connected to Justin, Justin's connected to you, Justin's telling me that he can get a connection to you for a certain, with a certain quality and a certain price. And my router will select Justin's connection if it's the best one. And I will pay Justin for routing that packet over there. And once I've done that, it's not like the source of the packet is deciding what the whole path is going to be and paying for the whole path. They're just paying the next hop. And the next hop then, uses whatever next hop after that is best.
So you mirror the routing structure of TCP/IP.
Yeah, exactly. And so
I think this is a key point, actually, is that we see Althea as more of an extension of the internet than an attempt to try and replace it. Because people have this misconception. So once again, we want to try and avoid explaining how the internet works. Although maybe that's better if this is a longer form podcast. But that's a big task and something that I've been thinking about doing a podcast on for years because it's so difficult. But for some raw numbers, if you look at the construction cost of intercontinental fiber, you pay about $5 per user per year in intercontinental fiber. So the cost of your internet is vastly dominated by the last mile provider, the Comcast, the Charters, the Spectrums of the world. Intercontinental cables, the cost scales so incredibly that there's not much of a point in trying to go out and replace that. It's really the last mile where the inefficiency is to solve in the first place. And also, the way the internet is structured and the way people use the internet requires that you keep the number of hops small. So you cannot do wireless to wireless across the country just because of physics reasons. I have a post somewhere that explains this, breaks down the transmission physics and why it's inefficient. But those two reasons, in as little as I can explain them without blowing up this whole podcast into a very long lecture, are the key reasons why we see Althea as an extension of the internet rather than a replacement for it.
Can you talk a little bit then about the mechanism of payment settlement? I wonder if this is where a blockchain comes in, and I also am curious to hear about how you came across the PEGI project and have decided to work on that, how that plays into Althea.
So I actually think that Jahan can explain some of our early ideation on payments because it's sort of an interesting journey, and I think we can get it across well here. So Jahan, when we met, it was all about payment channels, right?
Yeah. So I always thought that when I first started working in Althea, I thought that it would be really important to have payment channels, like it's like the Lightning Network, for example, because I figured like having these routers paying each other, I was thinking like, oh man, I'm gonna pay each other per packet and stuff like that. I thought that the only way to have fast enough is payment channels, and we actually we developed payment channels for the project as well on Ethereum, but at some point we realized there's like a lot of complications and trade-offs to payment channels that are, I mean, frankly, even the Lightning Network, they haven't been able to overcome them. And it's kind of subtle, but when you try to really use payment channels, there's a lot of compromises. So, for example, if you're trying to have a direct payment channel to a neighbor, literally your neighbor in the next house over, you're connected on the Althea network, you've got to decide, if you have several neighbors to connect to, you've got to decide how much of your money you're going to lock in which of those neighbors' payment channels. And if you're wrong, and actually the user doesn't have to decide that because the user doesn't understand it at all. So, you know, you, as the router needs to decide it somehow. And if it's wrong, then it's going to have to, and all you're trying to avoid is transaction fees, of course. You're trying to avoid the gas fees that you incur using a blockchain. But if you're wrong about like locking the money up, then you have to get it back out again. Generally doing those kind of payment channel smart contract things, it involves more computation on the blockchain than just transferring would be. So it's more expensive. When you do the math, it turns out that payment channels like don't really, we found that they didn't really, they weren't really going to save any transaction fees really when all is said and done. The only way they can is if you're using like a multi-hop payment channel thing like Lightning and everybody is connecting to a few hubs. And in my opinion, that's not very, very decentralized. And so we actually found that just simply doing the transactions on a blockchain was cheap enough. And the other thing is that these routers, they kind of, and this is part of the code that Justin worked on for a really long time, getting it perfect. But the routers, they don't have to pay each other that frequently, really. They just pay each other every, what is it now, Justin? Every 50 cents or how often?
Right now it is, so it is 12 cents. My target was 10 cents, but the reality is, so there's an automated gas price system that determines what the target price is. So
in any
12
case,
cents right now.
The routers can wait to pay each other. So actually doing it on a blockchain is great because the constraints are actually less than for a person sending a payment, because a person sending a payment, they want to go through as quickly as possible until they have a low gas price chosen, can wait for maybe a day to send that payment, and it's not going to get cut off because there's enough slack built into the system. So your neighbor's not going to cut you off immediately if you haven't paid your balance for a few hours. So given that slack, it kind of makes it pretty easy. That being said, we're on Ethereum. We're on actually XDAI right now, I believe. We did start on the Ethereum main chain. And the Ethereum-based chains are not fast enough. So that's what led us to Cosmos. And so with Cosmos, basically, that first of all, it's a faster type of blockchain. Second of all, the Althea can have its own chain and doesn't have to share it with anybody. So that provides more, more speed, of course, and more room for the transactions. And the third thing is then if it does become a problem, if it becomes really successful and it does start to hit the capacity limits of one Cosmos chain, it actually wouldn't be too hard to have several chains going at once. And it'd be pretty easy to have them geographically sharded. So, in Washington, you'd have one Cosmos blockchain, and then in Idaho, you have another or something like that, So that makes Cosmos actually pretty well suited to this project. And then in terms of Peggy, we need some way to get value into our Althea blockchain to allow the routers to transact. In this case, that value is DAI, because we have all the users using DAI because, they don't want to.
User demand for a stablecoin is absolute. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah, I mean, people using our service are not like crypto enthusiasts. They're just normal people using the internet. So they want to pay in dollars. So Peggy gives us a way to transfer DAI over to Althea's future Cosmos chain. And then also, once Peggy is done, it will be possible to use it to transfer DAI or any other coin from Ethereum to the Cosmos hub. Right, I'm sure you probably want to touch on this in a little bit, but I will say that transferring the DAI to the hub and then using IBC to transfer it to Althea's chain is actually preferable. And we can get more into the details around that, why that is as well.
Just so we're clear on the user flow, the way you imagine users coming onto Althea is through the Ethereum on-ramp, right? Like, so someone would, exchange fiat for ETH and then exchange it for DAI and then come onto the Althea chain through Peggy and then start using Althea?
So that's the way we imagine the on-ramp, but the on-ramp now actually does most of that. So we have, when you have an Althea router, you literally go to the router dashboard like you would go to the dashboard for your home Wi-Fi router, except it's hopefully prettier. And you put in a debit card, you hit a button, and it buys ETH and sends it to the router. And you don't see this. You just hit the buy ETH button. It shows up in the router. The router converts it to DAI, sends it across the bridge, and prepares it entirely for exchanging. You, as the user, might not even notice that you're using cryptocurrency, except that it says that your balance is in DAI, and it talks a little bit about the funds being in the bridge. So we envision that same user-friendly flow with Cosmos. But yes, there's no, users do not have to worry about this. That is one of our fundamental things. Right?
Yeah. It's very smooth. You just hit reload router and put in your credit card, and it all happens behind the scenes. Right now, our network runs on XDAI, which is like an Ethereum sidechain. And all of what we've described, it uses the XDAI bridge. And the difference between the XDAI bridge and the version of Pegi that we're working on is that the XDAI bridge is trusted. It's like kind of it's automatic, but there is a trusted administrator, and it's kind of a trustful system, whereas Pegi will be trustless.
Yeah, that is a key distinction. And that is one of the reasons why we want to move towards Cosmos, and one of the reasons why we abandoned payment channels is because the challenge of, you know, the sort of challenge of keeping things decentralized is important, especially so in our case, because the internet is stable because it's decentralized. You know, Google can't roll out a protocol update to the internet and break everything one day. That can't happen. That's not how the internet's designed. And we want sort of the same thing in our blockchain infrastructure. So that's part of the long-term vision.
Great. So are we going to start seeing different Althea routers just, you know, using high frequency trading to exchange internet bandwidth or like bid for other people's bandwidth in the future?
So the way we design the market is, it's not necessarily high frequency, but considering that most internet exchange happens on the scale of months, I guess every 5 seconds is pretty high frequency. So it's not really a bid-ask system so much as it is routers advertise what they're willing to accept, and then devices select routes. So the purchase is sort of implicit by sending traffic, and this is how we really simplified the design process. And it also sort of deals with a lot of the problems you have with markets, because if you come at this from a traditional market perspective where you want like a bid and an ask and all of that, you're assuming that you have a good that is fungible in a different way bandwidth is. Because bandwidth is like fruit. You know, it's like you're a fruit seller and your fruit goes bad in 500 milliseconds. You can only sell it to so many people. And there's a few constraints on the market that let you really simplify the design. High frequency trading isn't how I would describe it. How I would describe it instead is if you have a neighborhood, right now you have a fixed internet provider and an internet speed and you have one provider. And you're kind of stuck that way. You know, if I were to go to a neighborhood right now with a brand new shiny fiber line, there's nothing I could do. You know, it would take me years to go door to door down that neighborhood, acquire the customers, change out their devices. And that's if my line was literally sitting next to their door. Like all I have to do is plug it in. It would still take me years to talk to every user, get them to sign onto the service, get them to hook and, you know, get an installer out there to hook up. All of this just takes so long. And all of this is just the bureaucracy of connecting people. None of this has to do with the technology, because I'm talking about this assuming that I have a shiny new fiber line literally already to every home. I've solved every problem except talking to the users, and that'll still take years. With Althea, if I want to sell my new fiber line, I simply go up to the neighborhood and I connect it into a single router, and that router advertises it for sale. And all of the devices in the neighborhood are like, oh, wow, there's a new connection. It's cheaper and faster. And they switch. And it takes 10 seconds. So that's not high-frequency trading in the sense of thousands of exchanges and prices and the way you see it in Wall Street. But it is a very different situation than how people are buying internet now.
I would like to tie this back to Pegi and how you guys are thinking of designing that bridge in order to make it useful for Althea.
So essentially, we need a way to onboard highly liquid funds, and Ethereum is the easiest place to find on-ramps, into a Cosmos zone. And we also would like the ability to take some of the funds that we are receiving and use them to, you know, invest in stuff. And this is where it becomes DeFi Pegi. So let's see. There are two primary goals here. We need to get liquid funds to a fast blockchain. And then we need to be able to use these funds in a more liquid environment, you know, where there are more applications, where there's something like the DAI savings rate, et cetera, et cetera. You know, why not just have our own stable coin that we sell ourselves on our own Cosmos zone? Well, you can't take advantage of all the other infrastructure. So the goal is to be able to take advantage of the Ethereum infrastructure and to be able to easily bridge user value.
That's really interesting. So how do you envision the end state of this network working out? Like, it's probably going to be Ethereum DeFi protocols meshed with Cosmos DeFi protocols, but that's not entirely clear to me. How does it look like to you?
So the end state is more about maintaining flexibility. So that's what like a bridge to Ethereum or IBC within the Cosmos ecosystem gives you, because it's hard to say, you know, what's going to be the best place to store operating crypto capital. Because, you know, the bridge or Althea is going to have a lot of user funds in it, and having them sit there not accruing interest, or just sort of sit around not accruing interest, is not something any normal company would do. So now we're thinking of a larger decentralized organization, but that's still a lot of funds to be wasting. And how exactly will the crypto ecosystem evolve to provide solutions to that? That's hard to say. But Peggy provides flexibility. You know, likewise, the best on-ramp may move from Ethereum to the Cosmos Hub in 5 years or 10 years. But once again, Peggy gives us the optionality to say, hey, we can go to Ethereum, we can go to Cosmos. We don't necessarily need to know how things are going to work out forever to do something now. But it also is what we need now, just for the sake of being able to onboard user funds to a Cosmos zone in an efficient way. And to describe sort of a near-term vision, the near-term vision, ideally, is that the Cosmos Hub is running Peggy. We, Althea, are IBC bridge to the Cosmos Hub. Users make deposits to their router, which send them to the Cosmos Hub, and then IBC them over to Althea, where we then proceed to use them. We may send them back across the bridge for investment or manage it, whatever, et cetera, et cetera. This is useful because we are designing Peggy to be very efficient at scale. So this is why we're talking, this is why Jahan said earlier that it may be better to have the bridge on the Cosmos Hub than on our own zone, although we probably will start with it on our own zone, just because higher volume gives lower fees.
That's amazing. That to me sounds like Althea itself may become the on-ramp, because if your routers are taking credit cards and then doing, you know, magic in the back end to convert it into cryptocurrency to then be able to be transferred throughout this interconnected network, then the Althea chain itself is going to do that.
Well, no, we actually would see the hub as being the on-ramp. If we connect Peggy directly, yeah, the Cosmos Hub, yeah. Uh-huh. If we connect Peggy directly, if we connect, you know, our own instance of Peggy directly to our chain, that will probably be a temporary thing. So there's a few reasons for that. So number one, the way that our routers take credit cards is through a company called Wire, and
I know.
They provide, they're an exchange, a centralized exchange, and they'll take a credit card and give you Ethereum. And they actually, what's nice about them is they made a widget, which you can embed into your own site, or in our case, a router dashboard. So that's how the credit card part of it works. And then once in Ethereum, our routers automatically call the Uniswap on-chain exchange and change it to DAI. And then they automatically send it to the bridge, which is now the XDAI bridge, but will in the future be Peggy. So then why it's better to use Peggy on the hub is because there's a really interesting kind of dynamic that will take place with this type of bridge, which is that the way it works basically is that the validators on whatever chain the bridge is bridging to, those validators, they essentially control the money that's in the bridge. So when a batch of transactions goes over to the other side of the bridge, so let's say a lot of people want to send money out of Cosmos and back into Ethereum. So that's like a batch of transactions that the validators send to the bridge contract on Ethereum. And those validators, if they're all evil, or if, you know, in the Cosmos way, if 66% of them are evil, they can basically have a batch that has anything they want in there. So they could say, hey, it looks like everyone's transferring their money to Jahan, and put in a batch of transactions that will do that. In the Ethereum contract, it will believe them, because what else is it to do? And that's how it works. So that, because of that, it's important that the market cap of the staking token on the zone that contains the bridge, whatever instance of PEGI, it's important that the market cap of that staking token is some amount more than the value secured by the bridge. So if you have some small chain, we hope that Althea will be a very big chain, of course, but let's say it's small and it's got a market cap that's 1/10 of all the money that people have in the bridge that they're using for their routers, then it opens up a situation where some malicious actor could actually buy up enough of the staking token of that zone to be able to put in a transaction to the bridge that would cause all the money that's locked up there being to be sent to them. So for that reason, having a chain with as high of a market cap as possible, securing those funds is better. And that's why we think in the long run, the hub will have one PEGI bridge, and then it will send the funds over to other chains on IBC, because that will be safer.
So I think that she was getting at a bit of a different angle there too, is that like if we're in a software sense, already presenting an on-ramp to the user, why not take that over completely? And that sort of gets into the vision for Althea we've been talking about, which is that we want it to be an extension of the internet. So, the answer of why not have like a closed billing system in the first place is that you want people to be able to interoperate. For example, Althea could run a private billing server, not a blockchain, just a billing server, and just do this on the back end like PayPal. Why not? Especially if we're already taking credit or debit cards or whatever from the user's perspective. But the reason why we don't want to do that is because we have a long-term vision of cooperation, not necessarily controlling all of the devices in the system, but in working with other providers. So let's say Althea networks start getting big enough and it becomes interesting for bigger fiber providers to just directly sell their fiber lines into Althea. They're not going to do that if we're a completely closed customer. So there's a certain mentality ISPs get because downtime is so punishing that they don't trust anyone. They don't trust new technology. They're very conservative. And they certainly don't give control of their networks to third parties. That just doesn't happen because ultimately they're responsible for keeping it online. And if you're a big fiber provider, if your network is down for 30, 45 minutes, it is the end of the world. It's hair on fire, company risking stuff. You don't ever put that in the hands of a single entity. You need more certainty than that. And that's where the internet is different. No one company could build fiber around the world. I mean, if I, as an American, were to try and go and build a bunch of fiber in certain countries, they would stop me from doing it. And perhaps rightly so, for their own nationality reasons. But because it is a network of networks, it works. And we want Althea to bring that to the edge. And that means that we want a decentralized system where you have the certainty that nobody can push through a breaking change overnight because the system is decentralized enough that consensus won't be achieved unless it is truly necessary. So I think that covers both angles of that question. And I know that this ends up feeling a little bit disjointed, but the problem with infrastructure, like SoKey and trying to rethink internet service, is that you end up having to look at it from a lot of angles and a lot of different ideas sort of intersect. And it can make Althea difficult to explain technically, that it's not difficult to explain to the layman. Because from our user's perspective, they get internet and they pay for internet and that's it. But from the like real technical deep dive perspective, there's a lot going on. And a lot of it is interesting, both from a bit of a political perspective, a physics perspective, and a software and financial perspective even.
How do you expect the architecture then of Althea zones themselves will scale? Will there be one Althea zone at least for a while? Will it eventually bifurcate along the geographical lines, or where you have local networks, one in Washington, one in New York, talking ultimately between the two over a fiber line, are there two separate Althea networks? Two separate chains, or do the chains differ from the network somehow?
So my expectation is that one blockchain is going to suffice for a very long time. John stated this before. We actually have a pretty good tolerance for transaction delay. The thing we can't tolerate is transaction unpredictability. especially on Ethereum, when the chain gets crowded, exactly what's going to happen to your transaction is impossible to predict, as is a series of rules to determine what gas you actually have to pay. It's just a very bad situation because the routers can easily end up in a sort of limbo where you're not sure if you want to cut the other router off because they haven't paid you and they're trying to be dishonest, or if they just can't get a transaction through because there's no solid rules about when they can or should get a transaction through. And this is why a Cosmos-based chain that we can modify and provide really solid deterministic rules for when and why transactions get in is very appealing to us. Because once we can remove that uncertainty, you know, it doesn't particularly matter to us if the payment doesn't settle for, let's say, 30 minutes, 10 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever, you know, a fairly reasonable amount of time, so long as one router can prove to the other, like, look, this payment is sent, it just needs to be processed. So there's a lot of tolerance for spiking, you know, adjusting payment velocity, et cetera, et cetera. And a Cosmos chain itself has a lot more room to optimize validating payments on the validator side too. I mean, already some tests show really large transaction volumes, but I'm fairly sure it's going to be easier to optimize that than to shard multiple chains for a long time to come.
I guess the last question, and perhaps it's overly speculative, but what do you see as some of... You can answer it in one of two ways. If you succeed completely and Althea solves the edge cost problem, the bureaucracy of which you've argued is the primary cost currently of internet bandwidth, what is the next bottleneck in internet? Maybe there's none. Is it just fast enough and we never need to make it any faster, really? Or if you think there really is no bottleneck, do you think the insights of mirroring the structure of the physical networks with a payment network can be applied to other domains? And if so, which are they?
So first of all, bottlenecks. I believe that if we can commoditize bandwidth by deploying Althea at a large scale, the internet as we know it will be much better off. So whether or not that is the limit, no, I have bigger plans for after that, but that is much harder. So hopefully someday you'll hear about that. The second question, which is about mirroring sort of physical networks with payment networks. For the most part, this is how logistics networks have worked for a long time. You know, somebody goes to a store and hands cash to a store owner. The store owner hands cash to a supplier who hands it to the manufacturer of the goods, who hands it to the workers who make the goods, etc. And in that way, Althea is more of a return to sort of a simpler payment graph than it is the creation of a new, more complicated one. And you can argue that all of these traditional internet service providers, where your money goes from your house, you know, several states away to a big company that then allocates it differently, you know, however they may, eventually reaching back to your service, is actually the more complicated payment graph.
What can people do to get involved with Althea? You're geographically limited, right? So I can't install it in Berlin yet, I am told. So
users can go to our website, althea.net, and they can see how to get involved there.
Quick, if there's not an Althea network in your area, then you can get involved in basically starting one. And that is a little bit more of an undertaking than just joining an existing network, but a lot of people are doing it. So, yeah, what Justin said.
Oh, yeah. A ridiculous amount of interest in that has come since COVID really started. You know, we can't really keep up with all of the new applicants, which is why I'm talking about changes I need to make because we need to streamline some stuff.
Okay, well, now that you bring that up, why has COVID spurred this new user surge?
Because people actually need internet? Who might have guessed?
Were their internets turned off from COVID?
No. There are lots of people in America and in rural and even semi-rural areas. You know, I'm talking like if you're in a small neighborhood, you know, many small neighborhoods in America have 5 megabit per second DSL. And that's simply not sufficient for working from home. And then there are lots of other regions which are simply not economical to provide access to. So, for example, this is really why you want to get Deborah on a podcast and talk about users. because she has local governments, you know, sort of fighting maybe too dramatic a word, but they are sort of jockeying for position to get a network first, because some odd 50% of the students in their school district do not have broadband to learn from home.
I gotcha. So now that everyone is working from home or learning from home, people who previously didn't have fast enough internet now are demanding to get it.
I'm Deborah St-Pierre. I'm the CEO of Althea, and I live in a rural community where we have about 1 in 5 of our kids that don't have access to adequate broadband to do the kind of e-learning that is necessary now after post-COVID, where schools are closed. And in fact, in the next county over, it's much worse. It's that 50% of the students there don't have access to adequate resources. And even one of the other counties in Tennessee that we're looking at, it's at 60%. And this isn't new, you know, information for folks that live here. It just was much easier for there to be able to do more park and access Wi-Fi, or to access the kind of education you needed out of school or a library, or to kind of go into work to access those things. But after COVID, those resources are not available. So that digital divide that separates the folks that have broadband that don't just became like a gaping chasm. And I think, you know, the story of Shannon Garcia is a really poignant example of this. So Shannon is an advice nurse for OBGYN, and she lives in my community here with me, where we set up a network. And she lives out by the river in a beautiful farm where, you know, she has chosen to raise her family and to live. But she had been driving, you know, 4 hours a day, 2 hours one way and 2 hours home every day, just so that she could have somewhere where she could access, you know, the internet to do over the phone and over the internet work to take care of her patients. So this is something that's very easy to be done remotely, but simply had no other option for the, you know, 10 or 15 years that she had lived here. Satellite was her only option. She's in a very geographically challenging area. There really wouldn't be a way to bring fiber there. You know, one of the kind of benefits of Althea is that we're able to build in really kind of creative and dynamic, agile ways where even fixed wireless providers can't. When she contacted us and said, hey, look, I really need internet. I have to work from home now, but I have to have adequate internet to do this. You know, we set about looking for what we call relays, which is just homes nearby that can relay the signal to their neighbors, and then they get compensated automatically for that kind of participation in the network. So we have this really great link that starts at the fiber in the center of town, then relays about 2 miles out into the valley, the center of the valley. And then from the valley, it relays up to a home on top of a high hill. Then from this tall high hill down to a small marina along the water. And then from the marina on the water to Shannon Garcia's house. And what's remarkable is that Althea software handles all of these hops well. She has about 65 megabits per second internet. And, you know, the latency is still well within tolerance, so that she's able to do those, like those Zoom calls and to talk to her patients. And she now has an extra 4 hours a day with her family that she will not have. Even if she chooses to go back to work, she can now work from home as she is doing now because of Althea. And that's like a really, really exciting and rewarding story. And it's one of the reasons why I feel so grateful to do the work that we do all the time.
How you guys are accessing these users, because they're obviously not, you know, cryptocurrency enthusiasts. They don't know, you know, how that works or what blockchains are even. You know, how are you communicating this to everyday users?
They don't need to know about blockchains.
They don't.
You know, they know that it's faster, cheaper internet. The way it looks to an end user, really, there's very little even mention of blockchains.
And
they
so
want to get better internet.
Is it correct to say that you are able to provide this production ready service using a Cosmos chain right now?
No, right now we're on XDAI, which
you're on XDAI.
Chain. Yeah, but once Peggy's done, we'll be transitioning.
Yeah, we could run on Cosmos right now, but we wouldn't have any financial on ramp, and that would be deeply problematic. But the actual like transaction stuff, yes, that would work on Cosmos now.
And so, okay, just to close this podcast, what is the ETA for Althea, Peggy?
I would hope that the ETA for Althea Peggy is this year. We've already started some work on it, and we really hope to make fast progress and get something in production quickly, although it may not be the complete vision. We're very iterative thinkers. So when I say ETA, I mean Althea chain up with, you know, proof of concept Peggy with real money moving through it, because we're not doing an ICO or whatever. The actual market cap of the bridge will be smaller, and the audits will be necessarily less sort of laborious. So I really hope to have like a chain up with user money in it, really using Cosmos in a production capacity this year. But, you know, we'll see how things go, especially considering all of the other stuff that we have going on. But I'm very optimistic.
Well, that's super exciting. And how far would you say you've prototyped at this point?
At this point, we have prototyped the Ethereum contract pretty heavily. You know, we really know how that's going to work because that's where the biggest constraint is. You know,
it's where the biggest risk is.
Yes, it's where the biggest risk is. And it's also where the biggest cost is, because, you know, every sort of couple of percent of efficiency you can get out of the Ethereum contract is a big deal. Over on the Cosmos side, fees are almost an afterthought because computation is cheap. On the Ethereum side, everything you do is about trying to keep it cheap enough that, you know, you don't end up paying some exorbitant amount in fees. And we've done a lot of optimization work, borrowing actually from a lot of Jahan's work on payment channels, where we tried to make the most efficient payment channel implementation possible. So I think it's sort of interesting that that has come back around to being useful again.
But you've said that you're only borrowing the payment channel mechanisms for this Peggy chain. You're not actually implementing payment channels onto it, are you?
No. We are not doing any payment channels. So like what I mean by that is that we studied a lot of solidity optimization techniques, or specifically Jahan did, and we are then applying these to the Peggy Ethereum contract.
That's probably a course in itself.
Quite.
So few words. Okay, well, this has been great. You know, we're basically out of time, and it was such a pleasure talking to you guys and learning about Althea Peggy and Althea.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks.